The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 436 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is free in the podcast section of iTunes, and you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT on Twitter. That's the handle for the Sports Report, the Sports RPT. We have two very sad stories to talk about today. A member of golf's Mount Rushmore passed away on the same day that Major League Baseball lost one of its brightest young stars. I'll talk about Arnold Palmer and Jose Fernandez coming up. We also have big news in college football. The Mad Hatter is out at LSU. And remember the saying, it's the economy, stupid? Well, when it comes to football, here's my saying. It's the quarterback, stupid. We saw even more proof of that during week 3 in the National Football League. I will take you through all of Sunday's action, and a couple of rookie quarterbacks are looking really, really good. I live an hour from Philadelphia. My radio station carries the Philadelphia Eagles. We have for many, many years. So it's big Eagles territory where I live. And they are going bonkers over Carson Wentz right now. The rookie from North Dakota State. How about what they did to the Steelers? Are you kidding me? Worst loss for Pittsburgh since 1989. Crank up the 80s music in the Steel City. All of that coming up on episode 436 of the Sports Report podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Keep the 5-star reviews coming in the podcast section of iTunes. Always appreciate that. And you can comment on any of these subjects that we talk about, whether you agree or disagree. Everything welcome on Twitter at the Sports RPT. Let's start with golf. A legend of the game, Arnold Palmer, passed away Sunday in Pittsburgh. He was 87 years old. He died of complications from heart problems. He was admitted to the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center last Thursday for some cardiovascular work, and his condition unfortunately got worse. He was nicknamed the King. How about that for a nickname? The King. Won 7 major championships. He won the Masters 4 times. Won the British Open twice. He also won the U.S. Open once. An amazing career. Started all the way back in 1954. And in 1955 at the Canadian Open, he picked up his first PGA Tour win. What was interesting about that tournament, he shot an opening round 64, and that remained the best opening round of his career. And he did it as a rookie, not too shabby. Went on to win 62 titles on the PGA Tour. That is 5th most all time. 92 wins, including international and senior events. He was PGA Player of the Year twice, 1960, 1962. And the tour's leading money winner 4 times, total earnings of almost $7 million. But he made a heck of a lot more than that after retiring. In fact, in 2015, he made $40 million. Among retired athletes, only Michael Jordan and David Beckham made more. Two pretty big names right there. And Beckham really hasn't been retired that long. 4 decades after his final PGA Tour win, Palmer still ranked among the highest earners in golf because of all of his endorsements. And I think the big picture point here is he brought so many people into golf. Really created a lot more interest about the sport. Heck, they called his fan base Arnie's Army. The man had his own army. out there on the course. Fans just loved him. He's well known for being extremely friendly and polite with the fans, and they in turn showed him a lot of admiration. And I think the current players on the PGA Tour owe Arnold a huge thank you. Now, obviously, the emergence of Tiger Woods had a lot to do with prize money going up, up, and away. But you go back and talk about people that really got this sport cranked up, you have to mention Arnold Palmer. Listen to this. He played at least one PGA Tour event every season for 52 consecutive years. I mean, how is that for longevity? Played in an event for 52 straight years. That ended with the 2004 Masters. And he spearheaded the growth of the Champions Tour, which is for golfers 50 and older. Won 10 times, drew big, big crowds for that. Very successful off of the golf course, designing courses, had a wine collection and apparel. I mean, this guy was getting it done off the course. Jack Nicklaus, 6. Tiger Woods, 4. Those are the only golfers who have won the Masters as many times as Arnold Palmer. Pretty good list there. Nicklaus, Woods, and Palmer. He developed a rivalry and a friendship with Nicklaus and then also Gary Player. And that trio became known as the Big Three. They won 7 straight Masters titles from 1960 to 66. That was the Big Three right there. Palmer's best win may have been at Colorado, Cherry Hills Country Club back in 1960. That is where he won his only U.S. Open championship, and he was down 7 shots. What an amazing comeback. Down 7 shots entering the final round. He birdied 6 of the first 7 holes and shot a final round 65. At the time, that represented the lowest final round score by a U.S. Open champ. It remains the largest 54-hole deficit overcome to win that tournament. I mean, that's impressive there. Down by 7 going into the final round at the U.S. Open and able to come back and win it. Jack Nicklaus said, quote, I thought this was good, Arnold transcended the game of golf. He was more than a golfer. He was an icon. He was a legend. Arnold was someone who was a pioneer in his sport. He took the game from one level to a higher level virtually by himself. We were great competitors who loved competing against each other, but we were always great friends along the way. Arnold always had my back and I had his. We were always there for each other. That never changed. He was the king of our sport and always will be. End quote. Well said by Jack Nicklaus. And again, what you hear over and over and over again is how nice Arnold was to other people. I'm not just talking about other golfers, just the average Joes out there. How he would take time to stop and sign every autograph. Nowadays, a lot of pro athletes sign a few and then they take off. A friend of mine collects autographs. He goes to different baseball stadiums. He finds out the hotels that the players are staying at, and he'll ask for autographs. And there are some guys, they just won't sign. Won't sign at all. Now, there are still some good guys. Ryan Zimmerman is one from the Nationals that my buddy tells me is always really, really good. He'll sign all the time. Some guys, they'll sign one day, and then the next day they'll say, hey, sorry, you missed me. I signed yesterday. I'm not signing again. Or they'll sign for a few people and then they take off. That wasn't the case with Arnold Palmer. And he was known for looking everybody in the eye, giving them a little smile, a little wink, a little personal touch. Truly a man of the people. And that's why he was so popular, even well after his playing career ended. Certainly helped him with the endorsements as well. And I think Jack's right about Arnold transcending golf. Even if you're not a fan of golf, even if you're not a sports fan, you know the name Arnold Palmer. And you know that he was one of the best golfers of all time. Just like if you hear the name Michael Jordan or Muhammad Ali, you know who these people are. Babe Ruth, Jim Brown. Certain people, you just know. So I think he's definitely on the Mount Rushmore of golf with Jack, with Tiger. And then, you know, it gets interesting. You have Gary Player, talked about him. You have Ben Hogan, Tom Watson. You can go all the way back to Bobby Jones if you want. Sam Snead. You can debate the fourth golfer there on the mount. But to me, Arnold has got to be on that list. But a sad time for golf fans everywhere. This is episode 436. I'll get to Jose Fernandez and that tragedy in a second. But first, I want to tell you about our great sponsor, and that is iHome. iHome has a new WeatherTough line of Bluetooth speakers. They're waterproof, rust-proof, and military standard shockproof. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality. iHome also offers a full line of headphones and earbuds for the fitness guru, the traveler, or just for hanging out at home and relaxing. So go to their website, iHomeAudio.com. Look at all of their great products. Look at their apps, their accessories, iHomeAudio.com. And I haven't mentioned, iHome is the number one brand, number one in digital speakers. Numero uno. Sound quality cannot be beat. And their products also look really, really cool. They'll stand out really sharp. So take a look at iHomeAudio.com. Moving on here on episode 436 of the Sports Report podcast. If you want to share your memories of Arnold Palmer, you can certainly do that on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT, the Sports RPT. Miami Marlins ace Jose Fernandez also passed away on Sunday. This is one of those stories that when you first heard it or saw it, or maybe it was on the bottom of the screen on the TV as a news bulletin, you thought, no way, it can't happen, cannot happen. Only 24 years old. He was one of three men killed in the accident. Coast Guard arrived around 3 a.m. and they found a 32-foot boat upside down on a jetty off of Miami Beach. It's a sight you don't see very often. Police are saying that the boat's speed is believed to be the primary factor in the accident. There was no evidence of alcohol or illegal drug use. But they're judging by the impact that the boat was going near full speed when it hit the jetty. They canceled Sunday's game at Miami with the Braves, and that was a no-brainer. I think you had to do that. Manager Don Mattingly spoke at a news conference. It was tough. He broke down. You could see the players breaking down, understandably so. Mattingly said Fernandez played with, quote, the joy of a little boy. I'm not a Marlins fan, but I'll tell you this. I watch a lot of baseball. I know everybody's into football now 24-7. I'm still old school in that I watch a lot of baseball. Every night I'm watching baseball. And if he was pitching, I was interested in the Marlins. I'm a fan of greatness. And he had phenomenal stuff. He wasn't good. He wasn't very good. And you know, I'm tough on this. I think the word great is thrown out there far, far too often. He was great. He had a fastball in the upper 90s. He had nasty breaking stuff. I mean, stuff would just fall off the table. He could make big league hitters look silly. I mean, really look ridiculous. And that is rare. Like a Randy Johnson. You know, remember that at bat in the All-Star game with John Kruk when Kruk's just bailing out of the batter's box? He wanted nothing to do with Randy Johnson. Or a Pedro Martinez in his prime when he was throwing mid-90s and also had the devastating changeup that could get you so far out in front. Or nowadays, you look at a Clayton Kershaw with that big 12-6 curveball. I mean, these guys are on a different level. And I believe Fernandez had Hall of Fame type of stuff. I really, really do. You don't see that type of power and also that breaking stuff. A lot of guys can throw hard, but you know, they don't have control or they don't have a really good secondary pitch. He did. And on top of all that, what I think I'll remember is this guy loved to play the game. High energy, he was passionate. Reminded me of Dontrell Willis when Dontrell first arrived on the scene with the Marlins. He created a real buzz. He had that funky delivery, had a lot of success. Everybody was talking about the D-Train, had a really cool nickname. And, you know, there's another guy that you could tell, without question, loved playing baseball. He loved the game. And not everybody does. Some do it for the paycheck. Some do it because they've always been great at it. And, you know, maybe they want the fame, the fortune, the limelight, whatever. That wasn't the case when I watched Jose Fernandez. You know, you heard Don Mattingly's comment about played the game with the joy of a little boy. I would agree with that. It was very, very refreshing to watch him out on the mound. Giancarlo Stanton posted this on Instagram, quote, "I'm still waiting to wake up from this nightmare. I lost my brother and can't quite comprehend it. The shock is overwhelming. What he meant to me, our team, the city of Miami, Cuba, and everyone else in the world that his enthusiasm heart has touched can never be replaced. I can't fathom what his family is going through because we, as his extended family, are a wreck. He was just a young boy amongst men, yet those men could barely compete with him. He had his own level, one that was changing the game. Extraordinary as a person before the player, yet still just a kid whose joy lit up the stadium more than lights could. A kid whose time came too soon, one that I will miss and never forget." That is Marlin slugger Giancarlo Stanton on Instagram. Fernandez had just announced last week that his girlfriend is pregnant, and the Marlins revealed during the news conference on Sunday that the baby is a girl. He had an interesting story. He had tried to defect Cuba three times and failed, and then eventually got to the U.S. in 2008, became a U.S. citizen last year. Was a first-round pick in 2011, 14th overall out of a high school down in Tampa. So people knew about him down there. And I mean, you look at the numbers, they don't lie. Career ERA of 2.5. Take a look at all the strikeouts he racked up. National League Rookie of the Year in 2013. Made the All-Star team twice, including this year. Had 16 wins already this season. ERA of 2.86. And like I said before, he was the type of player that made you stop flipping through the channels on the remote control. We all get, if you're like me, we have a bazillion channels, right? I run into channels. I don't even know what the heck's on these channels. I never even watched them before. So a lot of times we're flipping through, not even paying attention. And I'm not a Marlins guy, but if he was on the mound, I wanted to see. Because he was that good. I mean, just dominant stuff. When he was on, forget about it. I mean, you were not going to sniff this guy. So I always enjoyed watching him. And not only because of the skills that he had and his pitching repertoire, but because he enjoyed playing the game. He showed emotion out there. He wasn't a robot filled with cliches like so many of the pro athletes that we see nowadays, where it's the same quotes over and over and over again, and they look completely bored out on the field sometimes. You know what I mean? That wasn't what was happening with Jose Fernandez. So a big loss for Major League Baseball, big loss in the world of golf. This is episode number 436, talking about Jose Fernandez and Arnold Palmer, of course, here on the Sports Report podcast. I'm Paul Roberts. Thanks so much for tuning in. Tell your friends, your family members, your relatives, your coworkers, your buddies. Tell them about the podcast. New shows every Monday. Give you 30 to 40 minutes of high energy, opinionated sports talk without the homerism that you're used to. And we're on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT on Twitter. All right, let's get to some football. Well, save the NFL. Start with the big college news. LSU fired head coach Les Miles and his offensive coordinator, Cam Cameron, who's had a good bit of time in the NFL. Defensive line coach Ed Orgeron is the interim head coach. That name should ring a bell. If you remember when Lane Kiffin got fired at USC, well, it was Ed Orgeron who took over there as the interim coach and did pretty well. As for Les Miles, his firing came one day after LSU lost at Auburn 18-13. This was a crazy, crazy ending. Referees overruled what appeared to be a game-winning touchdown on the final play. They went to the replay, and it did show that LSU did not hike the football in time. The game clock showed zeros. Time was up. It was the correct call. But 1 second, it looks like LSU won the game. Right after that, they review it and decide, nope, you didn't snap it in time. That play doesn't count. Game over. Wild finish at Auburn. Miles expected to contend for a national championship. I know my buddy Phil Steele, college football guru, he was very high on LSU. Veteran team, but they start the year 2-2, and that was that. So he's done after 12 seasons. What a character. No doubt about that. How many coaches are out there eating grass? Yep, he did it. Play calling at times was very risky. I mean, he was not afraid to roll the dice. He won the highest winning percentage in LSU history, 77%. The second most wins in school history. Listen to the guy's record, 114-34. And he's doing that in the SEC. He won a national championship. He got back to the championship game. That was that dreaded game. They had like 100 yards of offense against Alabama. Oh boy. He won two SEC championships. Now all of that came in his first 7 seasons at LSU. So everybody was loving him down there in Baton Rouge. But hey, you know, college fans, sometimes you can be real short-minded. You know, you forget about what somebody's done. A lot of people thought that he was going to get canned last year. Remember, they had a run there, lost to Alabama, lost to Arkansas, lost to Ole Miss, 3 in a row, all of them by at least 2 touchdowns. But they finished up the season with a big bowl win over Texas Tech, and they lost just 1 underclassman to the NFL draft. So they had 17, 18 starters back on this team. And they got defensive coordinator Dave Aranda from Wisconsin to come to LSU. Plus, they had the number 3 recruiting class in the country, according to ESPN. So a lot of positives surrounding the program. However, lost to Wisconsin, got upset in that game at Lambeau Field, 16-14. And all of a sudden, people were really upset again. And then you have the loss at Auburn this past weekend. I watched that whole game. Oh, it was brutal. Really, really bad. Whether it's Danny Etling, who's the transfer from Purdue. How about Purdue putting 2 quarterbacks in the SEC? Or Brandon Harris at quarterback. The offense for the Tigers is abysmal. And Miles just did not recruit good quarterbacks. This team is talented. When I look at all the other position groups, there's talent there. I mean, guys who will play in the NFL at multiple positions, no doubt about it. But quarterback spot, it just wasn't there. They gave Brandon Harris so many opportunities, and he could not get it done. LSU was 2-7 against Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Alabama over the previous 3 seasons. They haven't beaten Alabama since 2011, a stretch of 5 straight games with the Tide. Now, I mean, it's not like that's easy to do, you know? It's not like that's the end of the world if you don't beat Alabama. Nick Saban and company, pretty darn good. I hope Les Miles gets another job. I mean, you never like to see anybody lose their job. I just think he's good for college football. He's funny, character. I mean, he says and does some goofy stuff. But the man won, and he won big in the top conference in the country, and he did it for many years. At the end of the day, his offense was his downfall. It was offensive. My eyes finally stopped bleeding from that game Saturday night. So I compiled a short list of things that I would rather do than watch LSU's offense. Here we go. It's not exactly a Letterman list, but the best I could do. List of things I'd rather do than watch LSU on offense. Number one, mow the lawn. Number two, shovel 2 feet of snow. And then when the snow plows come and push the snow back into my driveway, shovel it all again. Number three, pull my toenails out with pliers. These are things I would rather do than watch LSU's offense. Number four, chug 12 ounces of lava. Number five, sit in traffic on I-95 outside of Washington, D.C. If you've never had the pleasure of that, oh boy, you're missing out. My brother, he lives in Richmond. So if he's coming up to visit us in Pennsylvania or going back down, he always times it. I mean, he'll leave 6 in the morning whenever he has to get up to avoid traffic around Baltimore, but more so D.C. And then finally, things I'd rather do than watch LSU's offense. Drumroll provided by you, please. Listen to a Justin Bieber interview conducted by Ryan Seacrest. And I am out as far as that list goes. Les Miles isn't the only coach who has been shown the door. Notre Dame fired their defensive coordinator, Brian Van Gorder. And if you watch the Notre Dame-Duke game, the fans were actually chanting his name that he should be fired during the 38-35 loss at home to the Dukies. So help me out. I'm trying to figure this out now. What's going on in the sports world? Duke beats Notre Dame in football, but loses in basketball twice to Notre Dame? They lost twice to the Irish last season in hoops. Come back and beat them in football. I don't know what's going on anymore. Hey, how about Tennessee? And I thought the streak would end this season. They rallied to beat Florida 38-28. It was 35-7 in the second half in favor of the Volunteers. So the streak is over at 11 losses to the Gators. In the first half, it was an early TKO. I mean, I was shocked. I never, ever in a million years would have thought after watching that first half that Tennessee could come back. But they did. And the crowd got into the game. What an environment there. I mean, unbelievable comeback by Tennessee. I was destroying them on Twitter, I must admit. But then I did give them credit. I was on Twitter at the Sports RPT, and I was bashing Tennessee. But man, what a comeback there. Wisconsin, they switched quarterbacks. They destroy Michigan State. And it was just a week ago, Michigan State went to Notre Dame and won. What's going on with Sparty? That was another game where the line led the way. That's my motto. Let the line lead the way. It was funky there when you're looking at the line in that game. And Badgers win and win big, 30-6. I'll tell you another game that was fishy. The Stanford-UCLA game, and all my friends are saying, oh, Stanford's going to kill them, Paul. It's a mismatch. You saw what Stanford did to USC. Well, you know, that line had Stanford as a very, very small favorite. 3 points, 2 points, something like that. And this was a tight game. Don't be fooled by the final score of 22-13. Stanford was down and scored 2 touchdowns in the last 24 seconds. They had a long drive, and that quarterback was a first-year starter. He looked good on that drive. He throws a fade into the end zone to their tall receiver, goes up and gets it, and then there was a fumble that they took back for a defensive score at the end of the game. So this was not a 9-point game. UCLA could have easily won this game, but Stanford gets it done. Can't count out the Cardinal. That's a well-coached disciplined, hard-nosed, tough group right there. And if you go to Stanford, odds are you're pretty smart too. You know, they're not letting a lot of dummies into Stanford. So they beat UCLA 22-13. Texas A&M thought this would be an interesting game. This was another game, just a tale of two halves. They were tied at the break, and A&M ended up winning 45-24. Nice win for the Aggies there over Arkansas. So that's a look at some of the big college action from this past weekend. You can talk college football with me on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT, the Sports RPT on Twitter. This is episode number 436 of the Sports Report podcast. All right, let's get to week three here in the National Football League. My rule of thumb, very simple. If you don't have a quarterback who's playing well, you don't win. There are a few exceptions. Look at the Broncos last year. They were able to win it. Peyton obviously had a very down season, but there aren't many exceptions to the rule. And you look at the results from Sunday, there is a direct correlation to quarterback play and winning teams. The Eagles hammered the Steelers 34-3. Everybody is going nuts in Philadelphia about Carson Wentz. The Wentz wagon is overflowing. I mean, people are breaking ankles trying to jump on board the Wentz wagon. That's how fast this baby's moving. They're calling it Wentzylvania. I mean, this kid is on fire. Number two pick out of North Dakota State. So composed, well-spoken. He's humble, smart. He's got the size between 235 and 240, yet he can move. Now, he's not going to run like Michael Vick or a Tyrod Taylor, doesn't, or an RG3, but he can move enough to buy time, kind of like an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson will do. And what I love most, he doesn't make mistakes. Turnovers. It's the biggest stat in all of football at all levels. And this guy has no turnovers in three games. 23 of 31, 300 yards, two touchdowns yesterday against Pittsburgh. No interceptions. Doug Peterson today said his preparation, talking about Wentz, is similar to Peyton Manning. How about them apples? And others were comparing him to Ben Roethlisberger leading up to this game. Now, I'm not going to go there yet. I mean, he's only played three games in the NFL, but I love what I see from Wentz. And somebody in Cleveland should get fired because the Browns could have had this guy. I guess they prefer RG3 or Josh McCown or Cody Kessler, or heck, they were even using Terrell Pryor at quarterback on Sunday. Let's get to another rookie. Dak Prescott from Mississippi State was not a first-round pick. Cowboys get him. Romo gets hurt. He's thrown right in there, and he's looking good. Sunday night against Chicago, primetime game. Now, I know Chicago's a dumpster fire, and they've been decimated by injuries, but it's just the way that Prescott controls the game, runs the huddle. He looks like, you know, a 10-year veteran. He's calm. He's collected. Not rattled, similar to Carson Wentz. He was 19-24, very, very efficient, 248 yards, threw a touchdown pass, had a touchdown run. He can take off, did that at Mississippi State. Cowboys won the game 31-17. They actually should have won by more than that. So they are now 2-1 without Tony Romo. Redskins beat the Giants 29-27 on a 37-yard field goal with 1:51 to go. Again, focus on the quarterbacks. Kirk Cousins redeemed himself after a very poor start. 296 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. Meanwhile, Eli tossed two critical picks. One in the end zone in the fourth quarter, and then another on the Giants' final drive with 1 minute to go, trying to throw the ball over the middle. Big Blue had three turnovers and 11 penalties for 128 yards as they were trying to go to 3-0. Next up, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Are you serious? Six interceptions? Six? I mean, that's something. If you weren't watching the game, you just saw the box score, you'd think, that's going to be a typo. Nope. 6 interceptions. Good grief. Jets lost to Kansas City 24-3. Carson Palmer did not make it to 6 picks, but he did have 4 of them at Buffalo, and he had a really good year last season. 33-18 upset special. Bills get the win. I don't know many people that saw this one coming. And, you know, you've all heard this before. You have to look out when West Coast teams are coming east for these 1 o'clock kickoffs. And that was the scenario here. Cam Newton, the MVP, was not looking like Superman against Minnesota. How good is that Vikings defense? I've talked about it before. They're going to keep them in every game. They sacked Newton 8 times. 8. He had 3 interceptions. And the Vikings, without Adrian Peterson, without Teddy Bridgewater, won 22-10. They scored 22 consecutive points after being down 10-0, and they're now 3-0. Nice road win. Sam Bradford, only 171 yards, but he had a touchdown and no interceptions, taking care of the football. Blake Bortles, not taking care of the football. 3 interceptions at home. And the Jaguars lose to Baltimore 19-17 in a slop fest. Now, this was an ugly, ugly game. This one is not going to Canton. Somehow Baltimore's 3-0. Joe Flacco had a QBR of 41.8 yesterday and they won. Justin Tucker came through a 54-yard field goal with 1 minute left. There were some really, really costly penalties on Jacksonville. Dumb stuff. Jags are 0-3. Beware of the trendy McTrenderson picks. Jacksonville was 1. Tampa Bay was a trendy pick 2. The Bucs are 1-2. Here's a question for you. How did the Rams put up 37 points on you on the road? The Rams, the team that had 0 touchdowns in their first 2 games, none, and they're scoring almost 40. Case Keenum had 2 40-plus yard touchdown passes, and L.A. took a fumble to the house, 77 yards. Now, I do like that D-line. Those guys can play, but this is a bad loss for Tampa Bay. If you want to be a playoff team, you got to beat the Rams at home. Miami almost had a terrible loss at home. Cody Parkey used to be with the Eagles. Now he's with Cleveland. He missed 3 field goals, including a 46-yarder as time expired. If he makes that, game's over, Browns win. Instead, they go to overtime. Dolphins win 30-24. I'll tell you what, though. They're disappointing. And their fans, I was at a sports bar on Sunday. There just happened to be a lot of Dolphins fans there. I'll tell you what, they are sick of Ryan Tannehill. I mean, they were just destroying Ryan Tannehill. I think media bobbleheads can stop questioning Aaron Rodgers now. 4 touchdown passes, good enough for you? That's what he did against Detroit, 34-27, the final. He also had a key 11-yard run on a 3rd-and-8 late in the game that pretty much iced it. Jordy Nelson back, 6 catches, 101 yards, 2 touchdowns. So he looked good in this one against the Lions. And how about the pride of Northwestern, Trevor Siemian? 23 of 35, 312 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. And he did that at Cincinnati. Bengals have a tough defense. 29-17 victory for the 3-0 Denver Broncos with Trevor Siemian at the helm. They've already beat Carolina in a Super Bowl rematch, and now they win at Cincinnati. Good stuff. That's a really nice W right there. Sanders and Thomas were torching that Cincinnati secondary. Seattle erupts for 37 points against San Francisco. Russell Wilson, very efficient, 15-23, 243 yards and a touchdown. Now, he did sprain his MCL, and it looked worse, but just a sprain, it sounds like he's going to play against the Jets on Sunday. And this just in, the 49ers quarterback is not good. Blaine Gabbert had a QBR of 33. Thanks for coming. Drive home safely. San Francisco lost 37-18. Colts had to win at home versus San Diego. Can't afford to go to 0-3 in the NFL, and they did, 26-22. Andrew Luck hit T.Y. Hilton on a slant that went for a 63-yard touchdown with 1:17 to go. Great spin move by Hilton, and then he was off to the races. San Diego's tight end Hunter Henry fumbled on their next drive, and that was that. Chargers really, really banged up. They are now 1-2. And finally, the Raiders. Raiders held off the Titans 17-10. Oakland won despite not scoring a single point in the second half. Again, we talk about quarterbacks. Marcus Mariota, 2 interceptions, and he lost a fumble. Just not going to win like that. Oakland improves to 2-1. So, nice win there for Derek Carr and company. Although, you should beat the Titans. That's a look at the NFL. You can sound off on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. I'm on Twitter at TheSportsRPT with you every Monday here on The Grizz. And of course, in the podcast section of iTunes, please keep those 5-star reviews coming in iTunes. Really helps to promote the show. And tell your friends about it. We're with you every Monday. This has been episode number 436 of The Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv.